nightlife all across Australia.
What sort of relationship do you have with yourself? Do you love the person you are, even with your faults? Or is there something about you that stops you feeling good about who you are? Perhaps it's something about your body you might be a bit embarrassed about. Maybe you give yourself a pretty hard time for getting tongue-tied when you first meet new people. Could be the way you can't forgive yourself for an impulsive decision that you make. There are millions of ways that we can be tough on ourselves, and instead of being understanding and reassuring, there's that little nagging voice at the back of the head saying, "Well, you've blown it again. Boy, Wes, what a mess." So how can we put the little voice back in the box, and can we learn to be kinder to ourselves? Delighted to say nightlife regular Russ Harris is joining us tonight, and we're going to have a look at the concept and practice of self-acceptance. He's a medical practitioner, psychotherapist, and author of The Happiness Trap and also The Confidence Gap as well. Russ, good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for having me back.
Mate, we hear a lot about self-esteem. What's the main difference between self-acceptance and self-esteem? Is there a difference?
Yeah, there's a very big and important difference. Self-esteem is really trying to build up a positive self-image, and this is usually done through positive self-talk and focusing on all your strengths and good points. Whereas self-acceptance is making peace with who you are, a realistic self-appraisal, recognizing your strengths and your weaknesses, your successes and your failures, your good points and your bad points, not trying to build up a positive self-image, but having a very realistic self-image and really making peace with the whole thing, the whole you.
Russ, what's the first step in learning how to accept yourself, warts and all?
The first thing is to become more aware of what gets in the way of that. As you said in your introduction, we've all got this little critical voice in the back of our head. I've never met anyone who doesn't have a voice like that in their head. I've asked 25,000 people now in various settings, running workshops and presenting at conferences and giving talks. You know, is there anybody in this room, I ask the audience, that can put their hand up and say they never have thoughts pop into their head about not being good enough? So far, no one has ever put their hand up. So we've all got that little voice at the back of our head. And the first step is learning to recognize the comments and the put downs and the judgments. And then the second step is learning how to unhook yourself from those, how to kind of recognize they're showing up. But instead of biting the hook, or if you have bitten the hook, then how to take yourself off it again.
I suppose there's a couple of issues here. You know, it is a very competitive world now. Not a lot of us have the womb-to-tomb job, so therefore, you know, in the workplace it's often competitive. And also, I don't think there's been a time in society where we've had as much social feedback as we get today.
Yeah, I mean, that plays a huge role. We are more compared to other people now than ever before in history, and we start learning to compare ourselves to others when we're little kids. And as a result of this constant comparison, you know, if you think about it, when you're a little kid, almost everyone around you can do things better than you. So the I'm not good enough story starts young, even in people who have the most wonderful childhoods, just from this culture of comparison.
How long can the process take to start accepting yourself, the warts and all?
Well, that varies enormously. I mean, obviously, if you grow up in a family where there's a lot of self-acceptance, it's going to be easier for you than if you grow up in a family where there's a lot of criticism. You know, even if you had a wonderful childhood, you still got to learn how to recognize that voice in your head and unhook yourself from it. And, you know, when I'm on your show, I often talk about mindfulness skills and mindfulness being a mental state of awareness and openness where you're able to let thoughts kind of flow through you without sticking to you. Let your thoughts flow through you a bit like cars driving past outside your house. And the more you kind of learn how to do that, the easier it is to develop self-acceptance. Positive thinking is not going to stop those negative thoughts showing up. So you've got to learn how to recognize them and unhook yourself from them.
Russ, is it something that everybody can learn, or is it something that you've really got to be focused on?
Everybody can learn mindfulness skills, and everybody can learn if I can give you a jargon term, diffusion. We talk about fusion with thoughts, meaning you get all caught up in them, all entangled in them. You treat your thoughts like they're the absolute truth. They dominate your awareness and your behavior. And diffusion is a simple skill set that enables you to kind of step back from your thoughts, create a bit of space between you and your thoughts, see them for what they are. They're words and pictures in your head, and not get so entangled in them. And luckily, we can now learn that skill quite quickly, really in the space of a few minutes for most people with modern kind of psychology.
What if you've had a lifetime's practice of beating yourself up? You know, if from, a teenager or a small child, you've always thought you were second best.
Yeah, well, most of us have had a lifetime of beating ourselves up, as you said, you know. And the thing is, if beating yourself up was a good way to change behavior, we'd all be perfect by now. I mean, we've done so much of it. Obviously, the more entrenched that habit is of fusing with negative self-judgment, the harder it is to learn the helpful skill of defusion from it. When we say to people who don't beat yourself up, it's relatively useless advice. You can't just stop those thoughts from popping up. But what you can do with not too much practice is learn how to unhook yourself from those thoughts, step back, disentangle, go, oh, okay, there's my not good enough story. Ah, there's my mind beating me up. Ah, there's my mind telling me what a poor person I am. And even just stopping to notice and name that commentary for most people helps you to start separating and disentangling from it.
Yeah, it can be very disruptive to your life as well. You know, you can get into bed, think, oh, I'm going to have a good night's sleep, and then spend the next 3 hours tossing and turning and worrying about nothing.
Yeah, well, we've all done that, or most of us have. I certainly have, yeah. You know, you beat yourself up over something, or you go over it, or you, why did I say that, or why did I do that, or how could I have been so stupid, or why didn't I see this coming? And, you know, parents in particular are kind of prone to this when their children get into trouble. Many parents will kind of get caught up with beating themselves up for not being good enough parents. And, you know, it's a common scenario.
Mm. Our culture doesn't really endorse concepts like self-love, does it? Do we need to drop the stoicism in this regard and say, you know, it's okay to say, you know, I'm a good person, I'm, you know, I do a good job or whatever?
Well, you know, you don't really want to get hooked by either story. There's the I'm not good enough story, and if you get hooked by that, then you get low self-esteem and depression and you don't really like yourself. But if you get hooked by the I'm wonderful story, then you have arrogance and narcissism and egotism. So, you know, the approach that we recommend in The Happiness Trap and other mindfulness-based books is kind of learning how to hold your self-image very lightly. Don't get too caught up in the story of who you are, because at the end of your life, when you look back on the life you led, do you want to, you know, what's the most important thing? Is it, you know, I was there for my loved ones, I was a kind, loving, giving person, or did I have a positive story about myself in my head? You know, the emphasis is so wrong in our culture at the moment. It's all about trying to build up that positive story in your head. And if you can unhook from your self-image, your self-story, and instead put your effort into behaving like the sort of person you want to be deep in your heart, what we call living your values and engaging in life, you're much better off.
I guess something that we have got to realize fairly early on, life is short, and you don't want to spend half your life worrying about stuff that probably is not going to help no matter what decision you take.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so this is a, you know, again, just like telling someone don't beat yourself up, it's also mostly not very helpful to say don't worry about it. But we can use the same kind of defusion process, which is a particular mindfulness skill. Oh, here's my mind generating worrying thoughts. And we can learn how to step back and let those worrying thoughts come and go without kind of worrying. Really means we're holding on to our thoughts. We're getting all caught up in them. We're not letting them go. We're really kind of entangled in that process. And defusion is a mindfulness skill where we learn to step out of it and let those thoughts go.
Is it a first world problem? You know, in other words, if you're struggling to pay the rent and buy food, do you have time for self-loathing?
It's not a first world problem. I mean, mindfulness has been around for thousands of years. It can be found in all the world's great religions. It goes back in Judaism 4,000 years ago. It goes back in Taoism 7,000 years ago. It's in Hinduism 4,000 years ago, Buddhism 2,500 years ago, more recently Christianity. Many branches of Christianity have kind of mindfulness practices such as Christian centering prayer and so forth. So there's kind of, it's been around for thousands of years. That my books, The Happiness Trap and others, are based on a modern Western scientific model called acceptance and commitment therapy that teaches mindfulness skills from a modern scientific perspective, and really just takes a few minutes to teach people how to do this stuff. But the fact that this has been around for thousands of years tells us it's not a recent first world problem.
Mary says, "Hi Tony, does Dr. Harris feel that hypnosis is a good form of therapy for positive thinking or changing your thinking?"
I don't really think it's going to address the problem of self-acceptance, because positive thinking doesn't stop the mind generating negative thoughts. So I think it might kind of give you a temporary boost, but for most people that's not really going to give you any lasting solution. It's not going to stop your mind coming up with these negative self-judgments, and you can't be disappearing to a hypnotist every few minutes to kind of get a positive boost again.
Mm. Does self-acceptance also mean sometimes you have to accept the reality that you're mediocre?
Well, again, in a sense, we're all average, and we're all above average, and we're all below average. You know, a human being is such a complex phenomenon. You can find an infinite number of ways where you are average, below average, and above average for every human being. So, you know, self-acceptance processes say just let go of judging yourself altogether. It doesn't really help you to judge yourself as mediocre. It doesn't help you to judge yourself as good or bad. You know, it's why bother judging yourself?
In which case, what about the NAPLAN tests? Do you think that perhaps you can sometimes get a negative self-image about yourself by external forces?
Definitely, absolutely. If you've got people around you telling you that you're not a good person, it's very hard not to take that on board. And you get the flip side, you know, that which we see in our rock stars and our movie stars, you know, where everyone around you is telling you that you're wonderful, and then it's very hard not to take that on board and become a narcissist or an ego-driven person.
Mm. Suppose you look at some of the stars like Elvis, Michael Jackson. There's probably about 10 or 12 that you could name just off the top of your head. And these are people who had people around them who couldn't say no to them.
Yeah, well, they're really interesting cases you mentioned there, Tony, because obviously they were surrounded by people telling them that they were wonderful. And yet the voice inside their head was, kind of telling them that they were bad, defective, lousy, useless. And that voice inside their head was far more powerful than the voices they were hearing from outside. So those folks certainly would have benefited enormously to learn a bit of mindfulness and a bit of diffusion.
What do you think about this new AFL idea? And I think soccer's doing it as well. They're thinking about in the football up to the age of 10, not making it competitive at all. You know, in other words, not having, you know, points for and against, not having a table, and, you know, more focused on, you know, being there and doing something rather than necessarily competing in it.
I mean, that's a brilliant idea. I think competitiveness is massively overemphasized. You don't want no competition, because some competition is healthy, but I think it's massively overemphasized. And of course, it feeds into this whole idea that there are winners and losers. You know, there's no such thing as a winner or a loser. There's a person who wins a game on one occasion and loses a game on another occasion. But to go from that to say, well, he's a winner and that person's a loser, highly problematic. So I think it's a great thing. Some competition is good, but it's, I think Australia, we're quite good compared to the UK, for example. In the school education in the UK, it's so competitive at such a young age. It's kind of quite disturbing.
A lot of us have been tough on ourselves many years. How long does it take for you to feel a change in your attitude and say, oh, well, you know, things aren't as bad as I'm making out and, you know, you can turn it around quickly or?
Yeah, you know, there's kind of, so acceptance and commitment therapy, which is called ACT for short, there's been some really interesting studies published showing that really just 3 or 4 hours of practicing these kind of mindfulness skills in an ACT-based model can lead to dramatic improvements, even in, you know, really severe mental illness like schizophrenia. So can certainly be helpful for kind of everyday, you know, negative self-image and you know, feeling down about ourselves. Really, in the space of a few hours, we can learn and apply these skills very effectively.
Brian says, I'm an educated Tony and appreciate my faults. I'm arrogant, opinionated, etc. But these character traits make me who I am. And as I say to my students, I don't read the book, I write the book.
Sure. So, and I would think there's far more to any human being than you can sum up in the space of a few sentences or even in a whole autobiography. I mean, even if you read a whole stack of books about Nelson Mandela, you wouldn't even come close to capturing the richness and fullness of that human being. And so, you know, that text that you've just received represents the problem. You know, we sum ourselves up in a couple of sentences and then we say, this is who I am. And that's just scratching the surface of who I am.
Yeah. Well, what's the connection between self-acceptance and self-compassion?
Well, self-compassion goes a step further than self-acceptance. Self-acceptance is kind of making peace with who I am, with a realistic self-appraisal, recognizing my good points and my bad points. Self-compassion goes a step further. It's recognizing my pain and my suffering and my difficulties and my struggles, recognizing and acknowledging that I'm hurting and being there for myself in a very kind and caring and supportive way. And again, there's not a lot of that in Aussie culture. We're kind of quite a – I mean, I'm from England originally, but I've been in Australia half my life, and both cultures are very similar. You know, there's this kind of stoic, suck it up, take it on the chin attitude. There's not a lot of this idea of being kind to yourself is often seen as a bit wussy.
How does the criticism from others rather than self-criticism play into this whole thing? You know, for example, often you're told that, you know, you're hopeless, you're odd, you're a loser. And it could be family, it could be friends, it could be in a work situation. And, you know, that's going to impact you over time.
Yeah, look, it definitely has an impact if you're surrounded by this. And so, you know, the younger we can learn that these global labels, as soon as you slap a global judgment on a person, whether it's positive or negative, you can guarantee that you're losing touch with all the detail. They're like these kind of judgments that you're a loser or you're a winner or you're great or you're lousy or you wrote the book or you didn't write the book. These are just kind of caricature statements. They can't even begin to capture the richness of the human being behind that judgment.
Jay in California has sent an SMS saying, non-competitive AFL and soccer and such issues... such demasculization of society has already created too many problems.
Yeah, well, you don't want to go one extreme or the other. You know, I remember taking my little boy to Auskick and the coach had a kind of, you know, older boys around and they were playing this game and as soon as you dropped the ball, you had to sit down. So by the end, there were, you know, 17 little boys sitting down and the three kids that were really great were just passing the ball backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And I said to the coach afterwards, you know...
Does that work?
So what you just got, the three kids who don't need practice got more than all the other kids that do, you know... How about next week I take the kids and we do some practice with them? And he's like, oh, but we need the competition here, you know. So if you go too far, it's a problem.
Mm. As well as helping change the way you think about yourself, can self-acceptance and self-compassion motivate you to go out and make actual changes in your life?
Yeah, you're far more likely to make healthy changes from a realistic place of self-acceptance, recognizing your strengths and your weaknesses. And you're far more likely to be able to stand up for yourself in the face of big problems and challenges and crises in your life if you're coming from a place of self-compassion, being there for yourself in a kind, caring way. See, often the problem is if you fuse with a positive self-judgment, I'm fantastic, you kind of come for a fall, you know. But if you fuse with a negative self-judgment, you know, I'm a loser, then you become you're too afraid to step out of your comfort zone and try new things. So self-acceptance gives you the best of both worlds.
Libby says, how do you accept the qualities in others that don't appeal to you? You know, that other people might be mean with their money, for example.
Yeah, well, the same thing. You know, these mindfulness skills, if you want to develop better acceptance, they're very useful. Because if you think about it, what stops acceptance? Your mind tells you a story that this is wrong, this is bad, I don't like it, I don't want it, it's got to go away. And if you can learn to recognize that story and separate or detach yourself from it, unhook yourself from it, then you're able to kind of open yourself and make peace with reality. And there's a time and a place where, you know, even if you're going to take action to change the situation, the first step is to acknowledge this is how it is right now. Just like if you're skating on thin ice and you want to get off the ice, you first need to acknowledge to yourself, well, this is how the ice is right here, right now, and then take action to get off it.
Mm. Dr. Russ Harris is with us tonight, medical practitioner, psychotherapist, and author of The Happiness Trap and also The Confidence Trap. The Confidence Gap. I'm just wondering if you'd like to join us tonight. Perhaps some things that we've been talking about tonight have rung bells with you. Maybe you do beat yourself up a lot. It's one of those things that it can be really self-destructive at times and, you know, physically hurt you long term. Perhaps you are really having difficulty, you know, finding, you know, the good qualities that that are there, or perhaps it's something that you don't even look at, and that you're sort of storming through life rather than actually stopping and smelling the coffee.
Across Australia, it's Nightlife with Tony Delroy. It's Nightlife.
Dr. Russ Harris with us tonight. His books are The Happiness Trap and Confidence Gap, and we're talking a little bit about self-acceptance tonight and making things a little bit better. As far as Monday Night Football is concerned, Gold Coast over North Queensland Cowboys 13-12 at Robina Stadium. It's 19 and a half minutes to the latest ABC News. Let's find out some thoughts from Freya. Freya, you're saying Russ's book has really helped with a lot of anxiety that was there.
Yeah, absolutely. My doctor recommended that I read it, and I did, and it helped. I can't remember too many of the details now, so I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But certainly, I remember the title of the book and going through the chapters and reading them carefully and thinking about it, doing my homework with my psychiatrist.
Oh, well, good on you. Good that you did the homework.
Yeah.
Is it something that is designed, Russ, to become part of you? You know, in other words, you know, you pick up bits and pieces and, you know, it becomes a bit about how you approach life.
Yeah, these are skills, and they're really important life skills, and they can enhance any area of human life, because obviously no matter where we are, what we're doing, it's so easy to get hooked into unhelpful thinking processes, which we all have. So just learning how to unhook yourself and engage your attention in what you're doing is useful to anything.
Yeah. Freya, are you finding that you're approaching life a little more positively? Or?
Absolutely. It was a long fight, and I'd ignore it for a little while, and I'd get worse, and then I'd have to retune my mind to thinking about how to get better, you know, every few years. And I think now, after quite a few years, I think I'm on top of it.
You beauty. Great to hear well from done. You. John, you want a word about this? You recall a different approach to coaching kids.
That's right, yes. Many years ago, I heard of this rugby coach in Warringah, up the north coast, north part of Sydney. He used to say that the kids weren't allowed to score a try until after all the other kids in the team had scored a try. So the idea was that the good players, they learn to catch as well as pass.
It makes sense. Yeah. Russ, do you have a thought?
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, that goes a long way to encouraging, team spirit.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep. It was good. They won the premiership under fives, under sixes, under sevens. Apparently it worked for them.
You beauty. Thank you, John. Josephine, you say accepting your feelings towards yourself has been a turning point for you.
Yes, and it's taken a hell of a long time. I'm older than you, Tony, and I have to thank Dr. Russell Harris because he was recommended to me by my own doctor, and it didn't happen immediately, by the way. It's taken 18 months into therapy to get to the point where I'm at now. I'm coming out of my hibernation period.
Yeah.
I'm accepting myself, and I am also compassionate towards myself, and I am not too worried about what other people think of me, because other people do not know what I'm going through. How can they possibly go through? Every one of us has a different experience, a different life experience. So, you know, it's a matter of each one of us being able to say, okay, I feel this way today. I'm accepting of myself as I am right now. And so...
Oh, fantastic. That's a long haul. It's, you've worked hard. That's great that you've made.
I have worked hard. Thank you, Russell.
Josephine, what was the turning point for you? Was it understanding that, you don't have to be perfect and that you are who you are?
No, because when you're in panic, you don't think of anything like that. You're just going to sort of, I become paralysed with fear. But it took, I have to say that the ambulance people of Victoria, I've got them to thank for, because I reached crisis point about a month ago and they came to my help, they came to my aid, and they taught me how to breathe again. And I really thank Chris and Chris, because that's their names were Chris and Chris. And they came at 1 o'clock in the morning and they helped me out. And then it all came back to me, Russell Harris, the words of my doctor, the psychotherapy that I attended at the clinic, all of it made sense again. I was able to think clearly again.
Good on you.
Thank you.
Good fun, Josephine, and great that it's turned around for you.
And a good point there. You know, obviously, I'm saying that you can learn these skills very quickly.
Sure.
However, you know, the more severe your life situation is and your life history, you might have to practice and persevere for for much longer periods of time to really get a turnaround, depending on who you are and what you're doing.
Paul, you're saying too much praise early is a real problem too.
It was ridiculous growing up in a typically good Christian household, constantly getting praise. It was only up until about my mid-20s that I sort of started to question that sort of a lifestyle and was able to step away from religion, which was a massively difficult task. I've proven that I can change, but still now the difficulty in accepting any sort of criticism still remains a very hard thing for me to do.
Paul, your religion was all-encompassing. You couldn't think for yourself?
Basically, yeah. And then I went on to join the military, and that sort of fostered that aspect as well. But, what you mentioned, that all-encompassing doesn't help with your critical thinking and the flow-on effects of that.
So where did you find yourself, Paul? Just bound up in rules and regulations and living life by everybody else's regulation.
Pretty much. And then I hit a lot of cognitive dissonance, and that's when a lot of the dramas start. But you can slowly get through it. But I think living that period of your life in that sort of a indoctrinated lifestyle or living by other people's rules, as you put it, does have a lasting effect.
Russ?
Yeah, I think, criticism hurts and excessive praise is problematic too. One of the key things we want to look at here is the difference between evaluating actions and evaluating the person. So criticism's much easier to hear when it's done in a non-judgmental way about your actions. You know, what you did there didn't work very well is much easier to take on board rather than you screwed that up or you're an idiot.
Yes.
And it's the same with praising our kids. You don't want to praise the kid, say you're a good boy. What you want to do is praise the behavior. It was lovely the way you helped put the dishes away after dinner tonight. And that way you can, to some degree, kind of circumvent some of these problems.
I like it.
Good on you. Thank you very much for sharing tonight. Ryan, you wanted to ask about mindfulness and schizophrenia.
Well, yes, but the specific reference was, I think Dr. Russ was talking about, I think he said ACT training or ACT. I can't remember the exact word I was driving at the time. And he said that it after 2 or 3 hours, or was it 3 or 4 hours, with even people with schizophrenia, it has a major improvement, a type of mindfulness training. And I thought he used the word ACT training. And I was interested in knowing more about the reference,
yeah,
or how to find out more about that.
Sure. So my books are based on a model called ACT, which is short for Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, which is a mindfulness-based approach. And there's now half a dozen studies on the use of ACT with schizophrenia, teaching people how to use these mindfulness skills to unhook themselves from delusions and hallucinations and accept themselves more. And it's not just mindfulness. It's also about values. There's a big part of ACT that's about clarifying your values and what you want to stand for in life and using those values to set goals and take actions. So it's kind of acceptance and commitment and, you know, commitment to action that improves your life. If you do a Google search, acceptance and commitment therapy and schizophrenia, you'll be able to find this information.
Look, that's great. That's basically all I was after. I was just interested in your discussion at that point and driving. I missed the reference. And
you got it now, Ryan. Thank you for calling. Veronica, you want to say that understanding that life can hurt and hurts everybody has actually helped you?
Well, I don't. You haven't mentioned Dr. Harris's third book, The Reality Slap, which is the one that I'm currently reading as a recommendation from my doctor. And I've had a particularly bad year with a number of awful things that have happened to me, including, you know, my partner left me when I chose to move home to live with my mother, who has advanced Alzheimer's. And so, like, I've had a few slaps in the head that have made life really hurt for me in the last 18 months. And the Reality Slap book, that particular book, has been really useful, because life's not meant to be happy every minute, and it sort of points out you just have to deal with it and move on. And I'm really grateful for this particular book, and you haven't mentioned it tonight, but it's it's a good one.
Russ?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad it's been helpful. And, you know, that's a key point. You know, just we can easily buy into these ridiculous positive thinking notions that life's all happy, happy, and you should think positive, be happy. And, you know, that's fine, but it's unrealistic. Sooner or later, reality will slap you around, bad things will happen, and that's really hard and really painful. And my book, The Reality Slap, places a major emphasis on self-compassion, you know, acknowledging that I'm in pain, acknowledging that this is hard and difficult, and then being there for myself in a kind, caring way. And that's a new skill for most people. It's a skill you don't normally learn at school or in your family.
Well, this is the thing that I discovered is I was quite hard on myself because I kept doing that. Why me? But, you know, why me? Anyone in the whole world can say that. There are awful things going on everywhere. But when you just realise, well, why not me? This is what's visiting me right now. How can I deal with what's visiting me right now? And I've just found that the Reality Slap book has been very useful for me to gain some perspective. It means it's okay to be hurting. This is what I got from it, is it's okay to be hurting. It's what you do with how you feel that makes a difference. Yeah. And
a lot of us, don't learn about things, about relationships and human beings and how we interact with society. We sort of stumble across it and perhaps learn a little bit from our parents, a little bit from our best mates, and a little bit from our teachers. But we're going out there without an instruction book most of the time.
Well, that's true. And when your life has been reasonably nice along the way, when suddenly something slaps you down, you go, why me? Why did this happen to me? Whereas it's happening to everybody all over the world at some time, in some place. And as long as you can keep that in perspective and just deal with it, that's makes a huge difference, But your book certainly put that in perspective for me, and I'm very grateful. So thank you, Dr. Harris.
Good on you, Veronica. You're getting lots of revs tonight. You'll walk out with a very large head. Debbie, you're wondering, how do you broach these sort of issues with teenagers?
Yeah, that's right. I'm also a member of the fan club, so thanks heaps, Russ. I keep your book by my bed, and I just refer to it so often. It helps me a lot. And I just wish I'd learnt a lot of these lessons when I was much younger. It might have been a bit of an easier path through life. And I try and help my two young teenage daughters, because they struggle with so many things that are important to them at the minute, that in the scheme of things, I try to help them let go. And I just wondered if you're thinking of writing a book for children or for parents to help their children, because this is so valuable.
Well, I mean, you said it there. If teenagers is such a hard period of life. I did actually bring out a book last year, which is called The Happiness Trap Pocketbook, which is an illustrated cartoon-filled version, which we did for teenagers, myself and cartoonist Bev Aisbert. So it's a very kind of simplified version of The Happiness Trap. Really good for teenagers or for adults who are not big readers or who are too depressed or anxious to kind of focus on reading. So it's that's what I would recommend as a starting point.
Okay, thanks for that. I didn't realise that was out there.
Yeah, good on you, Debbie. Thank you for that. Baz, you say encouraging self-worth is important, but you don't want to discourage the pursuit of excellence.
Yeah, hi, Tony.
G'day, like... Baz.
Hey, how are you? I love your show. I've listened to it for many years. The first time on the radio.
Thanks, mate.
Bit sort of anxious myself. Look, I'm in my 50s, but when I was growing up as a young kid, I was in a small country school, and we used to have inter-school sports days and school sports days, and there was times when every year we knew we were going up against kids we couldn't beat, and we'd give it our best, but at the end of the day we'd have to sit down and watch them get all the medals and the trophies and the pats on the back, which used to knock your self-esteem around a little bit. But my parents used to encourage me and say, find something you're good at, which I did. But at the same time, I absolutely love Australian rules football, and if we didn't encourage, and I've helped coach football teams over the years, and if we don't encourage talent, we're not going to have these elite stars. And a lot of them have had to overcome adversity themselves. And you'll often find that the elite sports stars have given up a lot. They've made a lot of sacrifices. They've given it 120%, and that's why a lot of them are there. So I don't think we should discourage talent when it emerges at the same time.
Yeah, so, Russ?
Look, I agree. You've got to encourage talent. What I'm saying is, let's discourage self-judgment. Just because you won the match doesn't mean you're a great person. Just because you lost the match doesn't mean you're a bad person. Let's kind of just talk about actions. How did you play? What did you do that worked? What did you didn't do that worked? Kind of encourage people from a young age to let go of judging themselves. You know, the whole self-esteem thing is because some kids are winning the game and thinking, I'm great, and the other kids who didn't win are sitting there thinking, I'm hopeless. Let's help from a young age to let go of that whole self-judgmental way of thinking, because whether it's positive or negative, it's a problem.
Well, that's what I was trying to say in a roundabout way, but there's times when, you may not be good at sport, but you may be good at something else. And I think it still comes down to the the parents or, you know, the coach might pat you on the back. Well, we had a kid when we were about 10 years ago when I was helping the mini league out, and he was absolutely hopeless. I'd basically hand him a football and he'd drop it. 10 years later, he's the best full forward we've seen.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's persistence overcomes resistance. And I think we need to encourage people. We need to encourage people when they can't make the grade, say, look, there's other things you could be good at. So don't worry if you don't succeed at this. It's not the end of the bloody world, you know.
Absolutely.
You've got to pull attitudes, you know.
And you know, I agree with you, and I would add, you know, you don't have to excel at something. It's okay to be competent at something. The world is full of people that are doing sports and music and will never excel at it, but they still enjoy doing it.
Mm. Anyway, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Baz. Great to hear from you. Stan, you say it's really important to set goals. That's an important part of the process.
Yeah, I do. I believe, look, following up from the last caller, I think competition, like in sport, is great, but the people involved have to also apply skills. So you can't, if you have bad role models in the trainers and, for example, parents, you can't turn around and now turn around and say we can't have a winning or losing team. You've got to focus on what the last caller and the comments that were made is reinforcing the effort, the satisfaction. Mate, you didn't win, but geez, that was a great game. You know what I mean? Because life's all about, you know, the challenges. And if we don't give people the aspiration to have a go, then they'll just be complacent.
Yeah.
You know, teenagers have got the easy off the hook of whatever, let's not try, you know, go with the flow. And, you know, we've got to, and I think back to our school system, encourage, you know, sport as a way of, you know, really as an outlet of teamwork, you know, interaction. We've lost sight of that. I'm a believer after seeing my son go through all the school years, and I was thinking, well, he did PE at year 12, and I thought, oh, geez, this is a crazy thing. But he's gone on to do a sports science degree.
Yeah. Stan, unfortunately, I've got to leave it there, and we are out of time. But thanks for making that point. Russ Harris, thank you for being there, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Lo. It's a pleasure.
The Happiness Trap and the Confidence Gap. Just a couple of the books from Dr. Russ Harris with us tonight on The Nightlife.